It's true that that there are a lot of knee-jerk anti-communists amongst the Vietnamese refugee communities in this country. Some of my best friends in the communities that I'm familiar with in Louisiana, and one over in Port Arthur, Texas, they're very political, and indeed I'm afraid I'm going to lose a few friends with this book. For instance, my best friend in Versailles, the community in New Orleans that I go to a lot, deeply distressed that there's a little photo of Ho Chi Minh on the cover of the book. And it's all in a very polite and indirect way, but I'm going to lose that friend, I know, because he's upset, too, about the story itself, which sort of humanizes Ho Chi Minh. And the Vietnamese do not come from a literary tradition of fiction of the sort that we write. It's their literature is mostly poetry and epic poetry and strongly traditional and set in the past. And so the kind of examination in contemporary terms of the human condition of people as human beings apart from politics, that's unknown to them. So given the reflex I've seen in many of my friends in the Vietnamese community, I'm not surprised that there'd be a lot of strife in, over this issue of do we recognize this government now that in place over there or do we not? So I think there is a legitimate political issue involved there, political. There's also it tends to be a kind of north-south split as well.
It almost seems like the Civil War isn't over for a lot of these communities. They're still fighting the Civil War.
I think they are. There is a north-south dichotomy, and my own sense of things is that the strife in Vietnam was as much a north-south thing as it was a communist democracy thing. And
Is it a Buddhist-Catholic, and
it tends to break down religiously too. Although the religious animosity is not as strong as the temperamental animosity of Northerners and Southerners. I mean, it's interesting that you find that. And of course, in Vietnam, the climatic influence of that North-South dichotomy is very strong because in Saigon, for instance, the climate is tropical. You know, there's never been a freeze in Saigon, for instance. In Hanoi, it's a climate not unlike Seattle's, for instance. So but you know, you find the north-south characterizations of each other in France, in Italy, in Germany, in England. I had a friend who was in Sweden for a year, and he says that the northerners in Sweden and the southerners in Sweden, where the climatic differences are not that great, have the same attitudes about each other that northerners and southerners have, you know, worldwide. And it's a kind of temperamental thing. And I think ultimately, you know, politics comes down to individuals. And I think a lot of political attitudes are assumed for the sake of a kind of personal sense of self-righteousness. And it comes down to the individual. And that sense of otherness, of separateness, of conflict is often a temperamental thing. And the Vietnamese have that, very much so.
Read that segment that you were going to read.
Right. This is from a story called Open Arms. It's toward the end. He says, "And as for myself, I live my life in the United States of America. I work in a bank. I have my own apartment and my own furniture, and I have saved more money than I expect ever to need if I can keep my job. And there's no worry about that. It's a big bank, and they like me there. I can talk to the Vietnamese customers, and they think I'm a good worker beyond that. I read the newspapers. I subscribe to several magazines, and in one of them, beautiful women smile at me each month. I no longer think of my wife. I go to the movies. I own a VCR. And at last I saw the movie Mary Poppins. The street I live on is one of four named after Mary Poppins in our neighborhood. This is true. You can look it up on any street map. The Vietnamese on the West Bank do not like the Vietnamese in Versailles. The ones on the West Bank point out that for the ones in Versailles, freedom only means the freedom to make money. They are cold people, driving people, Northerners. The Southerners say that for them, freedom means the freedom to think, to enjoy life. The Vietnamese in Versailles do not like the Southerners. We are lazy people to them, unfocused, greedy but not capable of working hard together for what we want. They say that they are the ones who understand America and how to succeed here. There are many on the West Bank and in Versailles who are full of hatred.
Robert Olin Butler, reading from Open Arms, a short story that's part of a collection of stories, A Good Scent from a Strange Mountain. When you started looking into the Vietnamese community, did you think that you were going to find that sort of dichotomy? Did you think that in the stories that you would find it would be the others, the other, as literature always finds?
I guess by the time I was working and looking at and visiting and making friends in the Vietnamese communities here, those things did not surprise me, because I found it to be true in Vietnam as well. I was in Vietnam in 1971, and when I was there, I spoke fluent Vietnamese. The Army sent me to language school for a year before I went over. I spoke it fluently when I arrived. I had an opportunity for 5 months to work out into the countryside with the people out there. For 7 months, I worked in Saigon, and my greatest pleasure in life was to go out of my hotel on the middle of night, 1 or 2 a.m., when the city never seemed to sleep, and wander the back murky alleys of Saigon and crouch in the doorways with the Vietnamese people there. And at the slightest sign of openness and respect that you show them, they are the most open and warm and welcoming and forgiving people in the world. And they just made, family after family, made me just part of them, part of their lives, and part of their culture. And so the issues that they brought with them to America that I found in the Vietnamese communities here were issues that were present then. I mean, even then, the Southerners and the Northerners, although they lived, and I had friends who were native Southerners and friends who were living in Saigon or in the environs, who had originally come down in 1954 when the country was partitioned. When I worked in the countryside, I worked in a near a little village called Honai, which had a Catholic church there, and a tremendous bell in the church, which they had actually carried the 1,100 kilometers or whatever down from the north.
There are communities all over this country now, Vietnamese, that have established, that are growing. I often think about how lucky this country is in that sense. The cultural, for everything from something as mundane as getting great restaurants, but there's something else that has come, and I think it's some of those things. It's the different people that have brought a different attitude.
These are real pioneers. I mean, there are over 800,000 Vietnamese in America now, and there's been a really strong sort of selection process that's gone on here. I mean, these people gone through remarkable hardships to get here. I mean, the South China Sea and the Thai pirates and the refugee camps and the unknowns and cutting themselves off from many parts of their family who are still in Vietnam, and that's a terrible thing for Vietnamese. And the kind of initiative and the bravery and the courage and the ambition that has brought these people here makes them really quintessential Americans, at least what we like to remember about ourselves or think we once were.
I think that point, that use of the word pioneers, is real apt. But also in that is there a longing, a looking back? Is it bittersweet?
Absolutely, because it was they were not intentional pioneers. They had no choice. Once they were a certain kind of person, they had no choice but to go through all of that. And there is a terrible longing. Much of it's based on, it's a gorgeous country. It's a beautiful country. It's a country full of a kind of ethos, a cultural ethos. It's very attractive. And for the Vietnamese, the extended family is terribly important. And their families have been separated, many of them.
Do you think they're going to be here in 30 years, in 50 years, with the same kind of tradition and strength, or will they, like all American, after a while, just meld into the larger culture?
I think that they will retain certain kind of universal aspects of their culture, but they're assimilating very quickly. In fact, much to the alarm of the older generations, in the Vietnamese communities here. The people who were born and reared in Vietnam have come over. Their children, who are becoming teenagers now and young adults, the kids appall their parents because they are becoming assimilated very quickly. They do not speak Vietnamese, many of them. They refuse to in the family. There's a lot of strife about that. And one thing that makes it very scary for the older generation is that part of Vietnamese culture is that that the parents and grandparents are always kept by the children. I mean, the children will take care of them to the end of their lives in the one household. And they are, the older generations are fearing greatly that part of the assimilation into American culture by their children is that they're going to end up, you know, being farmed out, which is the, you know, what they see as the typical American cultural reaction to the old, to the aged.
The last few scars, the last few remnants of the war, huh?
Absolutely. There's a the title story in the book is actually written in the voice of a 100-year-old man. Ho Chi Minh came to me again last night, his hands covered with confectioner's sugar. This was something of a surprise to me, the first time I saw him beside my bed in the dim light from the open shade. My oldest daughter leaves my shades open, I think so that I will not forget that the sun has risen again in the morning. I am a very old man. She seems to expect that one morning I will simply forget to keep living. This is very foolish. I will one night rise up from my bed and slip into her room and open the shade there. Let her see the sun in the morning. She is 64 years old, and she should worry for herself. I could never die from forgetting. That final story, the title story, it's a kind of harmonizing of those two elements in the human spirit. That is, also representing the fact that we leave parts of ourselves behind, aspects of ourselves, our personalities, our spirit, someplace else.